Welcome everybody to the public hearing on the physical mitigation of Muskrat Falls Reservoir Wetlands report of the Auditor General. Today we have Mr. Peter Madden with us. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you.
Thank you for your appearance here today. The Standing Committee on Public Accounts is dedicated to improving public administration in partnership with the Auditor General. The committee examines the administration of government policy, not the merits of it. The committee strives to achieve consensus in its decisions whenever possible, and members take a nonpartisan approach to their work on this committee. I remind participants that this is a public meeting and their testimony will be part of the public record. Live audio will be streamed on the House of Assembly website at assembly.nl.ca, and an archive will be available following the meeting. Answered will also be available on the House of Assembly website once it's finalized. Witnesses appearing before a standing committee of the House of Assembly are entitled to the same rights granted to members of the House of Assembly respecting parliamentary privilege. Witnesses may speak freely, and what you say in this parliamentary proceeding may not be used against you in civil proceedings. So now what I would like to do is ask the clerk to administer the oaths and affirmations to the witness.
I, Peter Madden, do solemnly, sincerely, and truly affirm and declare that the evidence that I shall give on this examination shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Thank you, Mr. Madden. And before we get started, we'll take an opportunity to go around and allow people to introduce themselves to you. My name is Tony Wakeham. I'm the MHA for Stephenville, Port of Port, and Chair of the Public Accounts Committee.
My name is Jordan Brown. I'm the MHA for Labrador West.
Lucy Stoyles. I'm the MHA for Mount Pearl North.
Good morning, Peter. My name is Brian Ward, the MHA for Bayver Green Bay. Welcome.
Paul Plake, member for Bjorn Grand Bank.
Helen Conway Ottenheimer, member for the House of Assembly for Harbor, Maine.
Good morning. Sherry Gamma Walsh, MHA for Placentia, St. Mary's.
Nice to meet you all.
And right across the room there, the staff from the Auditor General's Department.
Hi, Denise Hanrahan, Auditor General.
Hi, Trina Keats, Assistant Auditor General.
Hi, Jennifer Tuttle, Principal.
Adam Martin, Audit Principal.
Thank you all. Peter, normally what we do is we'll allow our witnesses, if they want to make an opening statement about 2 or 3 minutes if they wish to do so, and then generally what we'll do is committee members will take some turns in asking a few questions and keep it going like that. So if you would like to make any comments on opening or not, it's entirely up to you. Sure.
Describe my role on the, I guess, Muskrat Falls project, Lower Churchill project. So I started on the, started with NALCOR in 2009. As a support for the environmental assessment. So that process moved it into information request phase of the EA at the time, and I supported that process, and then into the joint review panel phase, and I supported that process. And then as it, when we received the decision statement, and it moved into the process moved into the construction phase of the project. I moved into the regulatory compliance role, which meant I was responsible for obtaining all of the approvals necessary to move forward with all aspects of construction for both the Labrador Island Link and the Muskrat Falls project. And I was also responsible for environmental effects monitoring to support the fisheries habitat compensation program, as well as the environmental effects monitoring for downstream effects, which is of particular interest to this committee for this subject. And I also was in charge of the historic resources recovery project that went on up there, and helped support all the environmental effects monitoring that went on for the project, That was more focused on the Labrador Muskrat Falls project. There was another person in charge of the Labrador Island Link environmental effects monitoring. Yeah, that's it. I guess I sat on the Environmental Management Committee with the Innu Nation. So as part, that was a requirement as part of the impacts and benefits agreement with the Innu Nation. And I was Nalcor's representative on the IEAC. And I guess for me, I guess if this is a chance to generally give my opinion. I think the lesson learned from all of this wasn't learned at the point of the discussion for this committee today. It was learned earlier. It was when in project planning phase, the level of engagement with key stakeholders was not the appropriate level of engagement. I think, you know, the Anishinaabe government, the Nuituva Community Council, should also have been involved in more closely in environmental effects monitoring planning and human health risk assessment planning. And I think there wouldn't have been a requirement for this IEAC that was stood up kind of last minute and I don't think was super functional. There could have been a partnership developed to work through the environmental effects monitoring plan. And then at the end of the day, as we're all seeing now with the data kind of supporting the predictions that were made through the comprehensive environmental effects monitoring plan that was developed, that there was a lot of fear-mongering involved at the end of the day, and that was a really bad outcome for the people of Labrador. So I think better engagement early on. That's the lesson learned, I think, for today, in my opinion. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. So now we'll start with some committee members. I'll just turn to my right.
Hello. So you were the regulatory compliance lead, correct? Yes,
that's right.
Okay. So were you the primary point of contact with the permits coordinator when processing permit applications and reviewing the permit register?
The permits coordinator being an employee of Nalcor?
Yes.
Yes, I was the manager of that person.
Okay. So did you or were you involved in the process to obtain environmental permits and authorizations for wet capping of 28 hectares of wetlands, about 70 acres, within an area near Edwards Brook Camp?
Yes.
Okay. So the Crown's duty to consult and accommodate Indigenous and treaty rights is a fundamental matter of social justice, which invokes very solemn legal obligations. Nalcor had consulted with Indigenous stakeholders, and according to the media, it was evident that these stakeholders wanted wet capping mitigation. The IEAC recommendation was that wet capping will be directed by government. Were you alarmed, surprised, or even concerned that work continued without communication from government about whether to proceed with wet capping or not?
I'm not sure I was alarmed or concerned, but I definitely understood that we needed to get the permit processed and expedited in order for project timelines to proceed as they were planned and get that wetland capping completed. So I was aware that there's a schedule risk, yes.
So you continued on to do the work, but you had not received communication from government whether to do the wet capping or not. Will that be correct?
No, I guess my role, I have no involvement in construction whatsoever. My job was to obtain approvals from government, right? So I wouldn't, proceeding with any construction would never have been my role in any. So, if that's what you mean.
So who did you communicate with about the fact that you had not received any permit from government, that you had not received communication? So it appears that there was a request put into government.
Yes.
It appears as if Nalcor is waiting for an answer.
That's right.
And asking for an answer, but not getting a response. But yet there was a timeline, so the work had to continue. Like, who was the communication with in government? You're the manager of the permits at the Nalcor.
Yep.
So who were you communicating with in government to say, hello, like, we need this permit. Where is it?
I think there's some email communication that kind of suggests that. Is there? I think Water Resources Water Resources was always our key contact for the, because that permit was their jurisdiction. So I would have been in constant communication with them, asking them where, as per protocol with any permit, really, would have been right. Following up, like, we need this to proceed.
So specific to this
one was a little bit different because it was a government Newfoundland initiative, not a Nalcor-led initiative. But we certainly needed a permit to proceed with the work, yes.
All right, so it was a government initiative because it was an IEAC recommendation?
Well, Nalcor wouldn't proceed. It wasn't in Nalcor's plan to do any physical mitigation for methylmercury. That's well known. I mean, it wasn't part of the environmental assessment project plan. That was never a consideration. So the only reason why, like, Nalcor identified the schedule risk and said, well, if we want to proceed with this, there is this option. And it was a good option because we had the infrastructure in place to access that location. And so we've suggested that this is how we could proceed with such a physical mitigation. But it would have been completely up to, I guess, the government of Newfoundland whether they wanted to proceed with that. That wasn't a Nalcor decision because it just really wasn't part of the project plan.
Okay. Yeah, so that's what I'm trying to get at. I'm trying to get at, like, what the discussion was within Nalcor, because it wasn't part of your timeline, it wasn't part of your plan, and all of a sudden you had this request.
Yes.
And you're trying to deal with your timelines that you actually have in front of you.
Yes.
And put this request in. So, I mean, as your time is going forward, there's a realization that you have not received this permit. And I'm just trying to wrap my head around Nalcor's communication to government specific to this permit, because we appear to have a communication deficit or issue or something here, and we're just trying to identify exactly what it is and how pressing was Nalcor, or because it wasn't part of your timeline, were you pressing at all, or, you know, were you alarming or saying to government you wanted this, but you haven't given us this?
As far as I remember, I was in, you know, I was following up regularly, as far as I remember.
You were doing what, sorry?
Following up regularly on this permit.
Okay.
Knowing that the timeline was getting tight, yes.
And so your communication was Water Resources?
It would have been Water Resources, yes.
Okay. Yeah, so my last question was, to your knowledge, was there any direction or communication from the Department of Municipal Affairs and Environment about wet capping? So to your knowledge, can you remember receiving any direction from that specific department pertaining to this permit and this request?
Well, we would have been in contact. I mean, I'm not sure what specifically they would have said, but we would have been in constant contact. But I don't think we were getting any feedback. Like, you know, we were essentially just saying, you know, we'll get back to you when we can. I guess that kind of feedback, right?
So you did communicate with the department that you guys had a timeline, and that you would proceed with your timeline.
Yes.
Were they aware?
Yes, I mean, we would have, I certainly would have, yeah, that would have been part of the communication. That,
okay, thank you very much.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to remember exact conversations. These would have been phone conversations, and I'm not trying to, you know, blame anybody for anything.
No, I understand. I'm just trying to formulate the communication here and trying to determine, you know, with this specific request from government, wet capping.
Yeah.
And Nalcor had its own timeline, its own work plan, and so government is putting something into your work plan, and, you know, you're in Labrador weather, and you're trying to proceed. Like, what was actually happening? You know, where did the communication, or did it even break down? Maybe it didn't break down.
I don't think it did break down.
Okay, so, I mean, you were probably, you know, I'm trying to determine, were you clear in your communication to government? You had a timeline, and this is a timeline you were following. And there's also indication that NALCOR had suggested that it could be done after you did your work in that fall. Do you, I mean, your permits, so you probably
It was my understanding that that would have been tough to pull off. And not, and it was already a very, uncertain, like, approach to reduce, you know, the issue. So I think that would have been like a, you know, worst case scenario, we could give this a shot type approach, right. I would think.
Yeah. So you just said tough to pull off during that period of time, or?
I think that it was, from my understanding, I'm not an engineer, but from my understanding was that it would have been difficult to effectively cover the wetlands when the reservoir was in place.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And just to be clear, so you don't believe that there was any communication breakdown from NALCOR to the provincial government?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's it for me.
Just waiting for my light to come on. Hi. Thank you, Mr. Madden, for coming today. And so the questions, I guess, we have is we want to try and find out what went wrong and if we can do something to change it if a project like this was to ever happen again. So in your opinion, what do you think went wrong in communicating with, you know, you did communicate, and who did you communicate with? Did you communicate? I mean, NALCOR had their own experts, and the government had their own experts. Do you feel they all communicated together? And if the government was requesting and asking for the wet capping to happen, just wondering why it didn't happen, and I'm just wondering what your opinion on what went wrong.
We would have proceeded with wetland capping if the government of Newfoundland had told us to proceed with it. We would have definitely done that. So if we had received a response to the permit application, we would have proceeded with wetland capping, from my understanding.
Okay. But you were responsible for getting the permits and,
yeah.
and that. So you had the permits in place? Is that correct?
No, we were advised by government that we would need an amendment to our main alter body water permit to create the reservoir. We needed an amendment, so that's the permit that I think you guys are aware of, that you've seen documentation. We needed that, so we would have needed approval to proceed with that piece of work, that scope of work.
So do you feel that the experts NALCOR had in and the experts that the government had all worked together for the betterment of the project? Did they communicate enough, do you feel?
I do think that there was sufficient level of communication between government and NALCOR, yes.
But the capping never, ever got done, so communication broke down somewhere along the lines, and that was your...
I don't think communication was the issue.
So what was the issue?
The issue was that this is, I can't say this for sure, but I think the issue was that it was a very difficult situation because the IEAC had proposed to do more than just wetland capping. They proposed that all of the soil be removed from the reservoir, which complicated things and made it difficult to proceed with one or the other. That's just my opinion. I have no way to, but I just think that made it difficult for officials at government to move forward.
So in after effect now, in your expert opinion, do you think it made a difference?
No, the wetland capping wouldn't have made a major difference. We even heard from, and I'm not an expert in that area, I became a, you know, tabletop expert after over that period, but experts like Wolfgang Jensen, who was supporting the Innu Nation at the time, mentioned that the best outcome for wetland capping would have been as a study. It would have gave the scientific community more information about the efficacy of such an approach. It was never done before, nor was soil removal. So nobody knew what the outcome would be. And we were covering such a small amount of wetlands in the reservoir, it's unlikely that it would have made a difference.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Madden. Just a couple of, I just want to go back to MHA Gammon Walsh's question with regards to permit application, and you're saying that your key contacts were water resources, and you talked about she talked about communication timelines with government. Were you concerned, and if you were, with regards to these timelines, did you communicate your concerns at any time with senior officials at NALCOR? And if so, what was their response?
Now, everybody at NALCOR was interested in proceeding once, because we had decided to put the application together. We wanted to proceed with that part of the scope because that way we wouldn't have any schedule risk, because there was a chance maybe government would have told us not to fill the reservoir type thing, right? So everybody was very interested in proceeding. That's why the application was put together. That's why we kind of were pushing to proceed. Yeah, we came up with the plan to go to Edwards Brook. So everybody on NALCOR's side was interested in proceeding with this work.
Okay, thank you. There were numerous... I mean, one of the conclusions of this report that there was numerous missed opportunities to understand and manage the urgency of the wetland capping timelines between the department and other stakeholders appears to have resulted in physical mitigation of Muskrat Falls reservoir wetlands not occurring. Would you agree with that conclusion? Do you feel it's an accurate account of what actually happened?
I don't think there was a lack of communication on this subject.
Okay.
If that answers the question.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Madden. We heard in from previous testimony from government officials that they kept saying that they had this presentation by NALCOR. There's a presentation given that this all could be done after impoundment. Are you aware, or are you aware of anyone at NALCOR who gave a presentation to members of the Department of Municipalities and Environment and Labrador and Indigenous Affairs on a presentation on doing the capping after impoundment?
I can't recall that happening, no. Sorry.
Yeah, because we've had three witnesses here so far that said they were involved in a presentation that was given by NALCOR on that topic. During that time, who were your other contacts in government? Did was just Mr. Khan with water resources? Were you also in contact with Mr. Goebel or Deputy Minister Chippett on these permit issues?
The way that the communication protocol was at the time, as far as I can remember, was I was definitely in constant contact with Mr. Goebel. He was my contact, and Mr. Chippett would have been in contact with my superiors.
Okay. Did the chair of the IEAC, after the report was submitted and the recommendations were accepted by government, did the chair of the IEAC reach out to you about his concerns about the deadlines not being met?
Reach out to me? No, he wouldn't have. No.
No, Mr. Remmer never ever reached out to you?
No, he wouldn't have.
No. Another thing that we've heard in the previous testimony from government officials was that they were not aware, seemed to be, of any urgency or anything about this permit. Did you ever at any time or know of anyone at NALCOR let the government know about the urgency on, like, you know, this permit need to be done, be submitted or approved at a particular juncture? Because from previous testimony, we found that they didn't seem to understand that there was an urgency for this.
Yeah, like, I would only be surmising that that would have been contacted. But I can't remember specifically if I said those words to them. But I would, with all permits, if we weren't getting them in time, we would have. That was protocol.
Yeah.
To give that information.
In previous testimony from other government officials there that came before us, there seemed to be an inherent internal kind of feeling that this wasn't need to be done. We had one testimony here that one individual talked about how it seemed like kind of like, you know, we're not really interested in doing this anyway, so it kind of gave the sense of feet dragging. Did you feel that same thing from the department, that they were just kind of not really interested in even getting any of this work done?
I can't say that was the case, for sure.
Okay. Obviously you at Elk were commissioned two studies on this. They had their first one, and then they had the supplementary one on just capping afterwards. In there, it was recommendation that all this work had to be done at a certain point, and that it had to be the permit would have to be approved by September. Was that communicated, do you think, effectively to government, that this permit had to be done by September in order to get the work done during the freeze-up of the wetlands?
Can't remember specifically if we said that, but, you know, if it was in the report, they would have had the report.
Okay. Perfect. That's all my questions now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Helen Conway-Ottenheimer here. First of all, I would like to just explore a couple of points that you made with respect to your role and the fact, first of all, you said that the issue, in response to one of the questions from my colleague, that the issue, it was difficult. It was a difficult situation. And the IEAC had proposed more than wetland capping. Now, you were a member of the IEAC, is that correct?
Yes, I was a sitting non-voting member.
Okay. And so, therefore, it was difficult for government officials. I think you were saying it was difficult for them to really, do what IEAC was recommending. Is that really what your point is on that?
Yes, and of course, that's my opinion, so it's not a fact. But the IEAC made a recommendation that was, was not very feasible, extremely dangerous, never had been undertaken before. The outcome was unknown, and it would have been difficult, certainly difficult for any governing body to require that they proceed with all of the recommendations of the IEAC. Yes, that would be very difficult, I would think.
Okay.
Extremely expensive.
So I'm just going to get you to explain and elaborate a little bit on that for us, please, because I know that we've heard from some other witnesses previously in this hearing. For example, you indicated that Martin Gobel was your contact. He was your primary contact, right? And his view with respect to, for example, wetland capping, if I recall correctly, is that there was really split decision on whether it should go ahead, this aspect of it, and that the science was unclear. Is that your view as well?
I think that he's right in the sense that the real problem here was that the community was afraid for their health, and covering the wetlands was not going to solve that problem. The outcome was definitely unknown. It would have been a experiment. So if that's what he meant, then I agree 100%. Yes.
So what would you have based that conclusion on? Covering the wetlands would not solve that problem. What was the basis for your conclusion?
It was actually advice from the experts that's also sat on the committee and experts in Alcor had, that because it's such a small amount of wetlands that it would have been in the reservoir, future reservoir area, that the real effect, the real reduction, you know, in the food chain would have been negligible. But that doesn't mean that doing it wouldn't have been a valuable undertaking for the from the science perspective.
Okay, so and what experts are you specifically referring to?
I do recall a conversation I had with Innu Nations experts, and we also had Dr. Reed Harris as part of our group, and those two would be considered experts in that field, and they would have suggested that that type of approach would not have had a significant impact on reducing.
Now, so you your view on this is consistent as well with the senior advisor on metalmercury, Martin Gobel, who also said that he had no objection to wetland capping, but that it had negligible benefit, and it was more about the optics. Is that your sense of it as well?
Well, I'm not concerned about optics, but that wasn't my job, and nor will it ever be. But I 100% agree that it would have been valuable as a study to add to the scientific understanding of the mobilization of methylmercury in these environments, but it would not have had any impact at the top of the food at the end of the food chain and protected people's health in any way, shape, or form.
So one other point that your lead contact, Mr. Gobel, stated in his testimony was that the fact that the work did not take place was, and I'm just paraphrasing right now, was communication, and that essentially that was it was a big part of the problem here. And we know from the findings of the Auditor General that that is the conclusion there as well. So you would disagree with him on that point, that really communication, you had stated earlier, it was not, you didn't think communication breakdown was the issue here. Is that right?
I wouldn't think communication breakdown was an issue, particularly since there was a permit submitted well in advance and it wasn't acted upon. I mean, the timeline for permits is generally 30 to 45 days. If it went to the, if it went, you know, when it was supposed to go to Indigenous review, it would have been a 45-day process, right? So it was well in advance of when it needed to be approved.
One other thing, you had indicated that in communication, you, with respect to that piece, that you would have been following up regularly, and your contact was also with Water Resources. So how often, can you recall how often and how regularly and consistently you would have been following up on this issue?
There wasn't like a defined protocol, and I can't recall. But it was part of our, you know, unofficial protocols that we would certainly be concerned and follow up on permits that we needed. But I can't recall specifically how many times I would have called or.
Okay, thank you.
I hope you have if we sent emails from the permits coordinator or myself, I hope they're on file there, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Okay, thank you. And Dr. Reamer, so he, being the chair, I believe, of the IEAC, you would have had regular contact with Dr. Reamer, would you?
No, I personally interacted with him before the committee sat, and after that it was, I would say that it wasn't a collaborative relationship after that.
And why was that the case?
Again, my opinion, but I think that Dr. Reamer had a unobjective to, in the beginning, to make sure that all of these recommendations were made, put forward, and that wouldn't have been aligned with the objective of on our side, or NALCOR had done a lot of work on this subject, had used a lot of real baseline data that they had obtained through over a number of years to identify the requirement to mitigate impacts to human health. Physical mitigation was not one of them. So we would never have suggested to proceed with that. It was an unknown, unverified, expensive, unsafe approach, particularly the soil removal approach. But it was clear in the IEAC meetings that Dr. Reimer was trying to push the committee towards making these recommendations. It wasn't balanced.
So I take it from that then that you would perhaps not agree with his assessment that, for example, after the recommendations were submitted, they heard nothing, and really they were in essence left in the dark. He expressed extreme disappointment. The silence was disappointing. Do you have any comment on that? And I see I'm running out of time, but do you have any comment on that?
I just know that I don't have any comment particularly on whether he was left in the dark or not. I wouldn't know what the communication he had with government on that subject. I mean, certainly we certainly did not engage with Dr. Reimer after the committee made the recommendations. There was even an instance when he was essentially suggesting that Dr. DeYoung's recommendations on the committee shouldn't be considered, because she essentially said that the subject should be addressed through the human health, on the human health side, on the communication side. That's how the subject should be addressed, not through physical mitigation. And he openly said that her opinion in the meeting, he openly said her opinion should not be considered.
So,
because she's a doctor.
Okay, so it seems evident that there was a lack of collaboration, there was a lack of cooperation in terms of the theme here. And I just want to ask about, I know Dr. Reimer was very concerned about urgency, and he indicated that there was a constant theme of urgency throughout this time period. Would you agree with that? Did you feel that there was a sense of urgency as well?
Absolutely. If you wanted to proceed with those physical mitigation measures, you were already past the point when you could properly plan to undertake such a major project. The soil removal should have required an environmental assessment by itself. Years of planning and research would have been required to properly execute that. So, and they recommended it. So, of course, there was a time issue, a big schedule issue.
Okay, and just one final question. So with respect to your role, and you were the lead, regulatory compliance lead with NALCOR, do you feel it was your responsibility, and if it wasn't, whose was it, to escalate the issue in October when the contractor was almost finished and it appeared that wetland capping may not happen before flooding?
Our senior management would have been well aware that this topic wasn't like a topic that was kind of dealt with in the working level. Everybody at NALCOR knew that this was these IEAC recommendations. It was in the news. It wasn't unknown. So everybody in both organizations were well aware of that. This was that we had made this permit. The time was running out. Absolutely, there's no doubt about it. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, thank you. Just have a few follow-up questions as well. To start off with, follow-up my colleague's last question. So clearly, as you suggested, this was a topic of conversation that now, of course, everybody is aware of the wetland cappings, and everybody would have been aware at NALCOR of the timeline to get this done.
There has been conversations made, suggested that, and again, that NALCOR had communicated that wetland capping could have been done after the flooding took place. And I just ask your opinion of that, if that was something that you would agree with, or that NALCOR communicated that, considering that you were the one responsible for that whole environmental impact piece. Yes. Was that something that was considered to be factual at NALCOR, that you could actually go in and do wetland capping after the flooding had taken place?
Yeah, like, I believe, and I think you guys can check this, is that I believe it was considered in one of the feasibility studies that were completed. I think it was actually written into there that maybe you could, and it was written in a, you know, kind of like everything else was with this. This has never been done before, so it was all kind of, you know, maybe we could do it this way. That's how I understood it. Conversations I had internally would have been that would have been difficult to do. And the, like we said before, like to cap a wetland probably would be better. It certainly would be better to do it beforehand, because it was, you had to be pretty precise with how to make sure you know ensure that the wetland was so to pour it from the reservoir, I would think would have been difficult.
Right, and I guess it comes down to the whole concept of whether or not you said that NALCOR was fully aware of and certainly engaged in the whole issue around wetland capping. It was in the news, so one would have thought government would have been fully engaged. We do have a series of communications going back and forth in August about trying to get the permits necessary to proceed with the work. What was the working relationship between yourself and Karen O'Neill, the Director of Communications? Would you have gone to her?
Daily contact.
All right. So I'm interested in that, because on July the 23rd, it said NALCOR submitted a communications plan to Municipal Affairs and Environment on intent of wetland capping as part of fish habitat compensation plan work. Would you have been involved in that plan, that communications plan?
Yes.
Okay, so that was July 23rd. On July 24th, the next day, and I would think that this communication plan took a time to prepare. It wasn't done in like an hour.
Absolutely. Yes.
The very next day, that communication plan was put on hold. It says by NALCOR. NALCOR puts communication plan on hold. Can you tell me, were you part of that decision to put that on hold?
No.
Do you know who was?
We were getting our, as I understand it, and you know, Karen would be best to probably answer this question. As I understand it, we were getting our direction from government on communications. So I could surmise that they would have asked us to put it on hold until they had, for under further advisement.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I'm just curious about it, because I found it strange. The other piece you've mentioned frequently is the around the whole committee that was set up by the premier back in the IEAC. And, you know, their first set of recommendations were given to government back on September of 22nd of 2017, which included, as you suggested, I guess, the soil removal plus the wetland capping. And there was a lot of discussion about whether or not what could or couldn't be done. But this report that we're dealing with is simply the wetland capping piece, because as we go down through the timelines, another series of recommendations were made later on by the IEAC, which you are a part of. Those recommendations would have been discussed. And the second set of recommendations, did they include, because in March of 2018, I'm looking at a timeline that suggested there were two options provided, scenario A being wetland capping and scenario B being targeted soil remover. And in April, After that, the IEAC says it issued a second set of recommendations, which includes the physical mitigation recommendation, targeted removal of soil and or wetland capping. So after that, the decision was made to go with the wetland capping. And then, so that was back in April of 2018. And it seemed then that there was a continuation of initiatives to try and get, can you take me through the process of how, okay, now the decision has been made in April of 2018, yeah. We're going to proceed with the wetland capping piece. So as the director, as the senior person in charge in Alcor from that environmental thing, how would you have gone from that moment to say, okay, here's what we're going to do and this is when we're going to do it? Were you involved in that type of discussion?
I can't really recall how this went down, but I can maybe guess as how things would have happened. So I would have been receiving my direction from my superiors on this subject.
And who would have been your direct superior?
So my direct superior was David Haley at the time. But I was in constant contact with Gilbert as well.
Okay, Gilbert as well, okay.
Gilbert was very involved in these types of...
Okay, yeah.
I understand he's a witness today.
Yes, Gilbert will be with us this
yeah,
afternoon.
Yeah, so he was in... Me, myself and Gilbert would have been in constant contact on this subject.
Yeah, and what I'm trying to understand is the sense now of urgency or non-urgency to get this done. Because we've heard testimony earlier that while it was agreed to do it, there was a lot of discussion that maybe it really didn't matter because you were only talking about a 2% impact. But regardless of that, a decision had been made to do this. And so now I'm trying to see or understand if NALCOR had taken that and ran with it. It appeared from some of the emails that NALCOR had put plans in place that
yes,
would
which,
have seen a...
Sorry.
You go ahead.
Sorry, I butted in there. Yes, like we... I think our motivation would have been to get it advanced so that it didn't affect the project schedule.
Right.
Like we certainly... It certainly wouldn't have been, as everybody knows, it wasn't part of the project. It wouldn't have been our recommendation to proceed with physical mitigation.
Right.
But we knew that there was a potential that this could affect the project schedule, so we certainly were motivated to get the permit process moving and to get everything in place, you know, mobilize contractors, make a project plan. Like, there's lots of more things than just getting the permit in order to undertake something like this, right? So.
Right, and according to what we've heard or saw and read, is that the idea was it could have been done at a significantly lower cost by the fact that you already had a team in place in position to carry out this work up to a certain point in time.
Exactly.
So NALCOR, but as you said, they wasn't in your original plan, but now you were prepared to move on it and you communicated that to government. And all those communications would have been to the Environment Department. Would you have communicated directly with anybody about that, or was it through other people?
No, I would have been in direct contact with Mr. Goble and probably other officials in the water resource. Like, Mr. Goble was a special advisor, I believe, if I remember correctly. But permits, like the regular... I can't remember who was in place at the time, but there would have been, you know, a permits coordinator on the other side, you know, environmental scientists, I think is what they're called, on the other side that would have been in charge of the permit applications. I think Dr. Khan
right.
would have been the manager or the director, and those would have been the individuals that technically would have been moving the permits forward. So.
Did you have any conversations with the deputy minister at the time?
I wouldn't have. That, like, the communications protocol, I remember this very vividly. The communication protocol would be that I wouldn't be in contact with Mr. Chippett.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Now, I'll just go back around again if some other committee members have some additional questions.
Hi. I just want to know, just to be clear, to your knowledge, was there an actual November date deadline, anything to do with November, on the amended permit when you submitted the permit?
I'm sorry, I can't remember, no.
Okay.
Sorry.
So I haven't seen the permit. Would a date be written on a permit if there was one? Would that be normal protocol?
As to when it was needed?
Yeah. So would Nalcor put a date? So you put in a permit, it takes
normally... Potentially in the project description, like the when you're describing the project, I think potentially, but I can't recall whether we would have done it.
Okay.
But I mean, I'm sure the document must be available.
Yeah. and routinely, when you put in a permit request, 30 to 45 days
exactly.
is the routine.
Exactly.
And it was the routine through the project?
100%. That's
no
what
issues?
We needed that. We needed to stick those. It was already tough to get the permits in time because we had, I think it was 30-day requirement under the Aboriginal consultation guidelines from the government. And that made it difficult to do business as it was. So we were always very hopeful that those timelines were met, 30 to 45 days.
And to your knowledge, can you recall having an issue with any other permit prior to this one?
Oh, yes.
So it wasn't unusual?
This long was definitely unusual,
okay.
Yes. But, I mean, of course, we were,
Yeah, I know.
I think we had 1,500 or 2,000
yeah,
permits.
A lot.
It was a lot. And there certainly was delays, yes.
Okay.
But this one was definitely, there was
okay.
There's reasons why this was longer, I would think.
There was reasons why it was...
Well, I would think that it had nothing to do with the application.
Okay.
It had to do with something else.
But to your knowledge, you were clear on the application of what you were requesting?
Oh, yes. The application would have had to been detailed. There was lots of communication on, well, this was part of the IEAC. Like it was well known what the scope of work would have been.
Right.
And, if we submit a permit, we expect to get it in 30 to 45 days. So, it would be hard to make an argument that it should have taken much, much longer than that. There was no information request to us that I can remember or anything that might be the protocol. If there's significant outstanding information that they need to process a permit, maybe it would take longer.
Okay.
But there was none that I can recall.
So around the same time as this permit, you're waiting for this permit and you're proceeding with your work and trying to stay on your timeline. On November 5th, there is a meeting of the Lower Churchill Committee. Nalcor is not invited due to an invitation error by the executive responsible for coordinating the meeting. Can you recall anything pertaining to that meeting? Or?
Sorry, I can't.
Okay. It says on November 5th, 2018, there was a meeting of the Lower Churchill Committee. Nalcor is not invited due to an invitation error by the executive responsible for coordinating the meeting. Can you recall anything pertaining to that meeting or not getting an invitation or anything?
Oh, sorry, I meant I can't remember. No,
you can't?
Sorry.
Okay. All right.
I wasn't clear.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
No problem.
Well, yes, thank you, Mr. Matt, for being here.
I'm bringing myself up to speed this morning on a lot of the issues. But one of the things that I've noticed is that the level of the methylmercury levels in downstream are apparently quite low at this point. But no one knows when these levels will begin to rise. It's a multi-year, it would take that much time, a lot of time, to be able to find out what these levels are, and that's what I'm reading. So,
did you want me to comment on that first?
Yeah.
So, I'm not an expert, but that's why you measure water and you measure in fish and other receptors in the environment. It's because you will see a near immediate increase in water, but the timelines are protracted for bioaccumulation through the food chain. So there might be a time in the future when you find that the levels will be higher in the receptors, but you should see the increases in the water monitoring immediately. So if you're not seeing increases in water, then it's likely you won't see major increases in fish.
So prior to the decisions being made, what was the water tested?
Actually, the Water Resources Management Division directed NALCOR to start water sampling before the IEAC was set up. That was a direction based on, essentially in response to the Nunatsiavut government's, you know, pressure.
Okay, so is that being tested?
To this day,
it's
still being tested, yes.
And do we know anything?
We know that the results are consistent with what NALCOR said and what the scientists that NALCOR engaged, the independent third-party scientists that NALCOR engaged, it's consistent with what they said it would be.
So based on that information, I assume that members of the committee had this information prior to making a decision. Would that have played in this? The results we have here, or the levels levels of metal mercury, and that was all done prior to a decision. Would that have a big impact on the decision, did you think?
Yeah. So the problem was is that every reservoir is different. The model that was developed by NALCOR, by Dr. Reed Harris, he used a number of different assumptions that were based on like experimental lakes region in Ontario and a number of other different things, some data from like Quebec reservoirs, some data from the Upper Churchill, a number of different things, and developed a model. But every reservoir is different, and there was kind of a thought that because there's a low storage in the Muskrat Falls Reservoir, that there wouldn't be as much methylmercury created by that reservoir because it's a fast flowing. It's almost a run of the river without being run of the river, right? It's fast flowing. It's not like the Upper Churchill. Much less landmass was flooded. And I don't know how much you want me to get into this, but the other big issue was that, so I personally have a big problem with the Harvard research. I think that was fear-mongering, and it was factually inaccurate. And the factual inaccuracies they had was they were identifying increases in certain species that would never be part of the system. So they would never have been in Muskrat Falls, or sorry, in the Lower Churchill River or Lake Melville. They would never, for example, lake trout, Arctic char, salmon, these species may for a short time hang out maybe in Lake Melville or transfer through them. Lake trout would never be in the system. They were all identified having increases from, like, so that's one example. They essentially ignored even the sampling. Like, NALCOR had taken thousands of samples from Lake Melville to identify the species composition. They never even looked at it to include it in their research, right? And this, people like Nunatsiavut membership, they eat a lot of Arctic char, they eat a lot of seal, they eat a lot of certain things that really would have been tough for near impossible for the flooding of the Muskrat Falls Reservoir to have an effect on these. So it was very frustrating that these people from somewhere else came up and scared our fellow Newfoundland and Labradorians. Like, it was very frustrating on my part. I took it very personally. And this model that Dr. Calder put together, the assumptions were almost, it seemed to us, purposefully ramped up to match a scenario that would result in a human health risk that really we didn't see there. And that's why the recommendations were on the communication side, like Dr. Kathy DeYoung had suggested while she was sitting on the committee. right? So I know I'm a bit soapboxy here. I hope that's fine. But I was very passionate about the subject when I worked there, and I was very concerned about how the IEAC was working and the miscommunication were. Certain people sitting on the committee, including federal officials that were sitting on the committee, were misleading people, and it resulted in really unfortunate, a lot of fear in the community. I mean, we had high school students doing like plays that were like they thought that their whole community was going to be sick. You know, like it was bad, and it was completely unnecessary, and the accurate, like, I know Nalcor essentially lost, and this is why my opening statement was what it was. The trust was lost. We all know that. The trust will never probably be gained again. But there was a lot of really good work done on the environmental effects monitoring side. We had Dr. James McCarthy there, who sat on the committee and was really well respected by everybody on the committee. Nobody, you know, kind of said, oh, you're working for Nalcor, we can't trust you. But he was the one who did a lot of the work, right? And there's a lot of really good work, and continues to be to this day. And the trust was lost, so that it was about upfront engagement. It was about being a partner with the communities, and we wouldn't be sitting here if that had happened properly. Right. So, okay.
Thank you.
Sorry.
No further questions. No, that was good. I really appreciate the answer.
Mr. Madden, and just to follow up on that, when you started speaking earlier, you indicated that there are lessons learned, and it really has to do with the level of engagement, and that's connected and linked with the trust that was lost. So the level of engagement from key stakeholders, I think that's what you're saying, was necessary, and it did not happen, and was not at the level that it should have been. And you also mentioned there could have been a partnership in environmental effects monitoring. So can you just in a concrete way, though, show us how that looks like? Like, how could that have been improved? How could that level of engagement occurred in tangible way?
So I'm not experienced negotiating impacts and benefits agreements. Like, I just want to say that up front. And I know that's complicated, and there's land claims. I think that those agreements actually became a hurdle to developing those early relationships. If we should have had agreements with all three Labrador Indigenous groups, and they should have reflected the potential impacts. And there was going into the project, there was no way to know that there would be no impacts on the Nunatsiavut membership or the Nunatuvuk membership. But we had to negotiate a IBA with the Innu Nation because the project was on their lands. So I think that became an unfortunate hurdle. But I think that there's been leaps and bounds since then. I think we'd all agree that. And I don't think you'd ever enter a project like this anymore without some sort of agreement with all of the Indigenous groups in the vicinity of a project that is of this size with these types of environmental impacts. So I think you do have to have an agreement, and maybe the agreement is less so on the like the IBA with the Innu Nation, of course, was like a business, like they were a partner in the project. So there was employment and business and these other, but maybe with certain agreements, it would be more on the development of the environmental effects monitoring and human health risk assessment. For example, this is a specific, obviously specific to methylmercury. But there was requests for funding from the Nunatsiavut government that weren't we didn't proceed on early after the joint review panel put out their report. And I think it was simply due to the fact that there was this idea that we don't have an IBA with this group, so we can't provide this type of, you know, financial support for this type of endeavor, which is, that, I think that was that's a big lessons learned. Like, the amount of money that should have been spent up front on that would have avoided a lot of issues that we've seen since, for sure.
And who do you think would have been responsible to see that that happened? Who directly?
Yeah, I don't know if I should speak to that. I'm not 100% sure if NALCOR or, like, with respect to the IBA, like, how we... I know that NALCOR was you know, doing the... Like, they had hired the people to do negotiations with InterNation. I think it would have been a joint... I think that's why it's relevant for here, is that I think it, you know, it starts with the government, and that we got to make sure that these projects... Especially, it's a bit of a different situation because this isn't a private proponent. But if it was a private proponent, you know, you would expect them to come to the table with these negotiations, the approach themselves, I would think. But this one was a bit different because certainly the government of Newfoundland and Labrador would have had to have an opinion on what, because it's their money, I mean, have mm-hmm. the opinion on what agreements were struck. So in this case, it probably would have been a joint kind of approach.
Thank
everybody
you.
Was at fault. Maybe, or everybody should learn a lesson, I should say,
yes.
instead of pointing blame. Yeah.
And in regards to that, you know, this is all about learning, trying to improve and correct where necessary. And in the Auditor General's report, you know, one of the conclusions, and probably, you know, in my view, the key conclusion in why the physical mitigation of the Muskrat Falls Reservoir wetlands did not occur is that, well, they could not determine, the Office of the Auditor General could not determine a plausible reason why the wetland capping policy decision did not happen in a timely manner. So that is the first finding that's cited by the Auditor General. Can you comment on that, and what is your opinion about that?
I think when... I think I kind of touched on it before. It is hard to know why certain things don't go, you know, like it became a topic that was, you know, being addressed in the media, and, you know, it was, the word I comes to mind is it was a political topic, which I know is not, I know you guys don't necessarily want to hear that that's a problem sometimes, but it certainly is, I guess. And, so I think that that's why you can't, when things become those types of topics that there's no excellent, there's no real win-win kind of outcome, then almost the result sometimes is the lack of a decision to move forward, as opposed to a decision to move in one direction or the other.
So in terms of what the reasoning is, I mean, it does not appear, and at least from the findings of the Auditor General, that there was no intent for this to happen. But perhaps what you're suggesting is the lack of action, the omission of any action led to, you know, this not occurring.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you. Those are all my questions.
Thank you. I'm just going to follow up with a couple of more now based on, again, some of the things. In terms of what we just talked about, or you just talked about the plausible reason why wetland capping didn't happen, in your position with NALCOR, you know, in terms of this regulatory role and environment effects monitoring and all of those things, are you satisfied that you did everything you needed to do to ensure that this wetland capping was, I guess, you, from an environment piece, from a permit granting piece, that everything that NALCOR wasn't, you had requested all of the permits and everything else you needed to get this work done?
Yes.
And when you did, you mentioned earlier about, you know, you dealt with thousands of permits, and normally it'd be anywhere from 30 to 45 days. It'd be the normal range. In this particular case, this particular permit
continued to drag on and was never issued. Is that correct?
Yes.
So, again, on that piece of why it wasn't done or why it wasn't issued, and again, I think, and that's why I want to clarify, that you had mentioned that you had not received any correspondence back from Environment. In other words, when you submitted the application, it wasn't that you received a whole list of questions back, or did you, were a series of questions to and fro, like in any granting of any permit, there may be things that need to be clarified. So was there any of that communication back and forth when it came to this permit?
No.
So essentially it was applied for and never granted?
Yes.
And from your perspective, Nalcor had done everything they needed to do to make sure. Okay, thank you. Anybody? Peter, I want to thank you for coming in today and for your openness and honestness and passion. And so if there's any closing remark you would like to make or anything like that, feel free to do so. And before I do that, though, I normally ask the Auditor General if the Auditor General would like to make any comment or anything. All good. Okay, go ahead.
No, thank you very much for your time and listening to my my opinions on things. And hopefully I was of some help. And yes. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the committee will now adjourn, or recess, sorry, for our next witness, or until this afternoon, until 1 o'clock. Okay, thank you.